Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Marcel Dargy-Smith, who's the former editor of Cosmopolitan magazine, has been a creative nonfiction teacher for many, many years, a journalist, and also a broadcast professional. So welcome, Marcel.
It's very nice to be here, Monique.
So you have had so many roles involved around writing. Could you give us a bit of a potted history about how you came to being a creative nonfiction teacher?
Actually, I think nonfiction's roughly the same as fiction while we're on the subject because most people end up writing about themselves unless they're brilliant. Shakespeare. I was always scribbling things. I mean, mostly I used to write poems, rhymes, because they amused me. I came across writers when I was very young, like Dorothy Parker, and she said, well, she was always full of just wonderful bon mots. She lived in the 20s, which is an awful long time ago, the 1920s. But there were some very clever people hanging around New York in those days and some wonderful writers. And there was something called the Round Table at the Algonquin Hotel, where just writers and famous writers gathered. I don't know, so I came across this. She's the woman who said, men never make passes at girls who wear glasses. And when a friend of hers was pregnant, she sent her a little note saying, I always knew you had it in you. I mean, she's just a clever, funny woman. And I just read her verses. And I started looking at my friends and I just started scribbling down verses or writing them rhymes, you know. And I don't know. And then you have to earn a living. And I was tossed out of school fairly fast because my parents were not all that friendly with each other. So at about university, when I should have been going, was out of the question because he was going one way and my mother was going the other. And I sunk into an awful job. And but I thought, well, while I'm there, because actually nothing's completely wasted. But I didn't do anything except going on scribbling. But I was very, very busy living. And I had a job finally in Art and Antiques, which I adored. I was travelling a lot and I became a publisher, which for people who don't quite know what a publisher, my mother thought it meant they actually published the books. But they're the people in charge of the money side of books and magazines. And so I got pretty good at that. Because I'm always very happy if I'm earning or learning.
One of the two, or both at the same time.
Well, yes, it's quite hard to put. Well, I managed it actually later on. So I did that for quite a long time. And then, I don't know, even tearing around the world, seeing art dealers and antique dealers, I was still, I don't know, money was nice, but it wasn't quite as seductive as, I don't know, being creative. I knew there was always that, you know, it was sort of choice. But then something magic happened to me. I had the possibility of being redundant. In those days, you got quite a lot of money. I was so thrilled. I took the money. There were other things like, you know, they gave me three choices because they were sending a magazine back to New York that I was working on. And they were not very happy when I took the redundancy. And with the redundancy money, I went to live in New York and did what I'd always wanted to do. It's fantasy living. It's winning the jackpot. I went to Columbia University and I did a creative writing course for a year. And I just thought I died and gone to heaven. It was one of the best years of my entire life. One, because, I mean, people are in love with New York, but I was utterly, totally. I'd always been in love with men before then. And then I suddenly realised.
Whole city.
I was in love with the whole city, yeah. Absolutely. I just used to look at the pavements when the sun shone and thought, my God, the pavements, even the pavements sparkle here. I was completely entranced. And coincidentally, sitting at Columbia, because I don't know how confident Maltese people or women are, but I don't think the English, although they look a bit arrogant sometimes, but they're not actually super confident. I mean, deep down.
No, just go about your business and hope no one notices you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, certainly the women. Mm. And I got to New York and I was like a sort of wilted tulip. But the more I was in New York, I suddenly began, my sort of head began to lift and I thought, the more I went to these writing workshops, I thought, I think I might be quite good. What that course gave me, apart from an incredible love that, I mean, of writing, and it really made me understand how to do it. even if I couldn't do it, I understood the process, which I'd never understood before.
So what are the main things that you took from those courses that then led you on to...
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, one of the things you have to do, that writing rule one is the George Bernard Shaw school of thought. Affix seat of pants to seat of chair. You can't just... Loads of people love talking about writing. They talk about writing forever. They're doing this, oh, I'm writing. No, they're not. And what a real writer does is sit down every day and write. They're obsessed with, they have to get it down, they have to comment. There's a story in them that has to come out, or there's something they want to say, because there's so many different types of writer. So I know one of the things you wanted to ask me was what makes a good writer.
Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, you can say that Jackie Collins was an appalling writer on any level. But what did she do? What Jackie Collins was, she sat down every day and did it. She observed all her life, and she was, I think, what's called in the book trade, a page turner. Even though it's very formulaic, she had her stories worked out. She observed everything. And not my kind of writing, not most people's kind of writing. And the fact that she may well have sold less than Umberto Eco or Orhan Pamuk or the, you know, the wonderful great writers. Yeah, she sold. It depends what kind of writer you want to be and what you want to say to the world.
But you think you can actually learn to be a writer? It's not something necessarily that's just in you.
It's do you have a story to tell? And if you don't, well, you might as well go away, because there's thousands of books published that are completely absolute rubbish. I mean, they're crap. But, you know, they get some sort of airing, and maybe somebody likes them. I mean, Shades of Grey, was it called?
Oh, 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, it's one of the worst books. It's dreadful. But I have to say, quite cleverly, I mean, did you know all women were into S&M? I hadn't got a clue. It was the least thing. I want to be tied up and, you know. But apparently, so here I was editing a magazine which had a lot to do about sex, and I have to say I didn't know about that. And so she did. And that's just an idea, and it took off, and she published online. I think you have to, I mean, one of the other things, you absolutely have to love reading. You can't be a writer if you never read, because we're like computers. It's like psycho-cybernetics. If you haven't taken it in, how's it going to come out?
Yes.
It can't go out. And I think, yes, some people are absolutely born writers and start writing. But the fact is, I know on a magazine where I saw, okay, non-fiction, but a lot of these people became writers as well. A lot of good journalists became writers. I mean, my God, Dickens was really a journalist. He was just writing every week, yes. David Copperfield wasn't published all at once. He used to write it as a monthly. And what he did, really, was describe Victorian England and all the appalling conditions. We see it as a wonderful novel, but what it is a description of those terrible times. So I think it's something you have to do every day. I think when you're a writer, I thought, it's like a new religion. You have to observe the world differently, and you have to think more, because what you're bringing to the page, to the screen, is your version, your take. Your take might be funny. It might be very, very serious. You might have a point of view that you absolutely have to get across. So are we talking, if you want to write about... And the other things people sometimes... I've had people turn up at, you know, the workshops I run, and they say, well, what should I write about? You say, well, why are you here? I thought you were the writer. I mean, you want to write.
Yes.
But I think it's people's stories that are so fascinating. And if you just want to unlock yourself, you can just start with the words. If you sat down very quietly and just wrote the words, I remember, something will come, won't it?
Yes, exactly.
I remember. Or if you write to say somebody you're very close to or you love or you haven't seen for a long time, and you just write, dear David or dear Angela, your best friend, I've been dying to tell you that. And it just
comes.
Something will pull out. Yes. And yet there's that other thing about how you write, and somebody said writing, you know, when you have a deadline, it's you sit there and gaze. You gaze at a piece of paper and, you know, till the drops of blood appear on your forehead. Sometimes it's so hard. But really, if it's something you did, I think people need often they need a topic just to get them going. They say, well, I have to confess that first day in Colombia, I was one of the people who said, what do I write about?
But having travelled so much and done interesting jobs, it must have given you lots of material.
Yes, loads. No, tell you what it gave me. Not so, I didn't ever write about, you know, being in Hong Kong or, you know, what it was like in San Francisco. I didn't write about that because I didn't know. But what you notice is that emotions and people are the same all over the world, where it's global, it's typical, it's eternal. You all fall in love, you all get hurt, you all get rejected, you all hope.
You all think your bum is too big in this, whatever. So
yes, sort of yes, I didn't make
same
that.
Insecurities.
Yeah, well, yes. I think the one place, well, probably there are two places, the Caribbean and the African. What's so great about being in South Africa? The women just strut their stuff. They have no insecurities.
Wow.
I love that about them. So South Africa's one of my great, I think I wanted to write about the people I knew and what I saw. But I didn't, and I suppose later on you think, it'd be nice to do a book, but then you've got to sit down and
do the book.
And I think people don't know where to begin.
Exactly. That's one of the things people come across. Where do I start? Where do I start?
Yes, so I know. And I was the same. And people were saying to me, oh, you're really good to come and write for us. And I would say, oh, I'm too busy living, which was just a flip, stupid answer. Truth was, I didn't know how to do a beginning and a middle and an end. I just didn't know. Well, that, yeah, the workshop told me. Well, I suppose that's where that helps. You just sit down and you can write, I remember. Or you just sit down, just sit somewhere quietly. But you have to. Your brain's got to be entirely focused on it. It's an act of creation. I was going to say it's like having a baby, but I think people even having a baby play with their phones, don't they?
Yeah. Do you think that's stilted people's creativity? Because now instead of going back and describing something, maybe writing in our diary, we take a photograph of it on Instagram or Facebook and you feel like that memory is done. I'm not writing it to record.
It's actually changing people's brains. Just walking along the corridor at the university here, I noticed there were just, quotations from Bill Gates and people, and they're all saying the world is full of wonderful books, good books, because people write books. The people that the very great writers, they're seekers of wisdom and truth. You're not going to find it out, really faffing around on Facebook, you know, telling your friend what you had for dinner last night or, you know, posting. All the pretty women I know constantly post new pictures of themselves every single day. Everybody I think is pretty. I've always been pretty. But after the 45th picture of them smiling and getting 45 likes, I assume they don't want to be writers. I mean, I think perhaps... Do men take it more seriously? I will think women think they can write because they talk all the time, and they can. It's also very, very hard because they're still doing most of the work and they've got loads of distractions.
But what about the hidden emotions maybe that men have? Do you think that makes them more, I don't know, but gives them more material because then they can release
their
writing?
You know, if you sit down and say to a man, could we talk, what are you thinking about? He doesn't know. He doesn't answer because he's not. He's thinking about, I don't know, Leicester or, you know, whoever his team is. What's for dinner? Or we're going to have a bit of sex later on. You know, he's not thinking all that seriously. Whereas, you know, women do think and they do say. But what is fascinating about men, I have found. Well, I found one or two things fascinating about men. But they do own up in print.
Okay.
Therefore, if you have a mixed workshop, I find, first of all, the men look at the women and they're quite amazed at their sort of vulnerability sometimes, and they start to like them for it. But also the women look at the men and think, I didn't know.
You had that depth?
No, I know. I've only had one living together result of a workshop, but it was a very nice one.
Oh.
He was a lumpy boy with ginger hair. And the most brilliant writer. And she was the prettiest girl in the class. And he looked at her, you know, I could see him looking at her thinking with his, you know, the way a cat looks at a king. The cat looks at the king. But after he wrote, we all fell in love with him, really. Aww. You can absolutely. Men don't always say things, but they feel them and they write about them. So, but I do think it helps maybe to have it structured. Because the course I went to, and when I was on Cosmo, I thought, God, I ought to put some of this back. So a city university who I was a bit involved with, I said, I suppose I should teach it. And it's structure and style. It's called structure and style because I remember somebody who taught me said writing and life have great parallels. And I thought, well, yes, my life's got no structure. It's quite a bit of style, but no structure whatsoever. And I noticed that. That's what writing, a good piece of writing is like a good life. Think of all the lives you know that are marvellous structure. Style, you don't want any of their life. And then the stylish people who live in such a collapsed, haphazard way. If you can sort of get both together, that's pretty good. Writers used to come in to, you know, when I was editing, and I thought they were very distinctly two sorts. There were people who definitely had something to say, but they weren't awfully good writers. Mm. And there were others, I could tell from the way they spoke, they were, you know, quite elegant, or they were interesting or funny writers, but they didn't have anything to say. You have to know what you want to say, the story you want to tell. And if it's, I just want to write, well, then you may have to just sit there and think, okay, start with, I remember, start with, dear Paul, and just see what happens. Or start with, I was here the other day at a weekend writing course here for fiction, and by marvellous Maureen Freely, and she said, just write, you know, the opening paragraph or sentence of the story, and that'll be the story.
Okay, so quite short and succinct.
Well, it doesn't always work for me. But if you look in the best books...
You've best got it. Mm.
Well, sometimes, and I just... There's a piece of writing actually on my desk in my apartment here, and it's just a wonderful young writer who, I say, I found. She came to a workshop, and she just said, I made it quite plain to him I never wanted to have children. Stop. You're dying to read the rest of that. So, you know, and that's, you know, where that goes.
Do you think it's important that you do have that killer line to begin with, or entrap people?
No, but what's interesting about writing is sometimes it's a bit like going to the gym. You should have to warm up. Mm-hmm. So you go there and you think, I don't know what the hell, what am I doing here? There's a screen. What am I going to do? And you just start writing something. And you just say, okay, I'm going to write about the nicest room, and the room that meant most to me in my life, and you're going to say why. That's a lovely thing to write about. Mm. Could be your first bedroom, or, I don't know, a room where you fell in love, or something. And you start, oh, God, this is crap. Halfway down the page, and that's where it starts.
It becomes something when you start to really open up to yourself, I suppose.
Well, no, but it is. It's the warm-up. You know, you sort of start relaxing. I mean, it was, you know, years ago when the whole world smoked, it was very, very difficult to stop writers smoking because they had to have the computer and the black coffee and the cigarette. And it was a thing. And everybody said, no, if you break that sort of circle of the cigarette, we won't be able to write anymore. Lots of people swore. They've managed it.
They've managed to keep doing it.
I was going to say, you know what's so wonderful about writing? If you love reading and you love writing, and this is a great revelation, well, it certainly was to me, who was sort of a mild, I don't know what they call mild manic depressive these days, there's something probably very smart to be called that. But you're never, and I'm single, you're never lonely again. You're never actually lonely because you can always fall into a good book. There's always people who love reading, and you can always write. In fact, you're craving the time alone often. And also there are things about writing. Who is it said? I think Dorothy Parker said, I hate writing. I love having written. Because that great feeling, it is that post going to the gym or going for the long walk. I did it, you know. It's even nicer if, I don't know what the local journalism scene is like here.
It's mostly political, to be fair, and then it's a bit of entertainment thrown in.
Yes. Well, so you don't have, I mean, I like Christina Chetkuti and her take on life. And yes, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe the Times wants a bit of a rollover, because now the current popes are absolutely charming and wonderful. So, I mean, we're all in love with him. And there's not too much. I once asked the Times their general remit, and they said, sort of politics and the Pope. But there's a whole lot more to Maltese life. The Times of Malta does not reflect Maltese life.
No, I mean, now there are lots more avenues. People are obviously blogging, and there are magazines, but there isn't that much space for creative writers unless you're actually going to be publishing your own book or a blog, which is, can just be a diary at the end of the day.
Well, listen, if you're a writer, every writer should keep, if not a diary, a notebook. Mm. I mean, it's just bliss. I mean, it could be, I might be writing down what you're wearing today or something you said that was funny, or something you saw. It doesn't matter what you write. Because when you can always use it.
True.
So I think maybe that's another start to writing, keeping the notebook. Great writers absolutely kept wrote. I mean, everybody thinks of the wonderful Scott Fitzgerald as a roaring old drunk. Oh, he couldn't have been. I mean, when he went out, when he partied, he sure as hell got drunk. But if you look at his meticulous notebooks, it was, girls he fancied, what people were wearing, what
those
people
very
said.
Details, yeah.
Very, very detailed and huge fun. And I think, although writing can be agony, writing and reading, it's one of the great pleasures, they really are.
What other exercises? So you've mentioned the do and the I remember. What other exercises could people do to see if they've got a germ of an idea there that...
Well, I think you want to know how to do it. I mean, I think writing workshops probably work because it's the coming together of other people, and it's the word for, people who are starting and... people who are staggering through life. It's the word deadline. So if you have to come every week, you go, oh God, I've just got to do this. I have to hand something in. So I mean, I run courses and I start with a kind of masterclass in my own idea of a masterclass. It's just talking about what good writing is with lots of examples and making people think, I didn't think about that. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Not writing streams of adjectives, not using, as they do in the Times, the most impossible words that, they're meant to alienate the reader. Or maybe the writer is trying to convince the reader that he's very, very clever. He isn't. I mean, what you should be doing is communicating.
Yes, absolutely.
You're talking to somebody, in print. You're telling them something. You're telling them a story, whatever. You're giving them a point of view. I mean, Daphne Caruana Galizia, I don't know what she's up to these days, but I now used to read to her and think, yes, absolutely. I love that point of view. It's wonderful to have a strong point of view.
Absolutely.
As I said, Dickens did. And probably it's one of the reasons that, people like Fitzgerald are relevant today, because here we are with those same vulgar, brash people that he wrote about. And whoops.
Still exist.
Yes. And so just falling in love, I think being fresh and original, that's really... what makes a good writer? You're fresh. You're original. You're not hackneyed. You're really, if you've read something before, that's not what you write. You don't use cliches. A lot of people don't always know what they are. Why should them? So I suppose a good writing workshop will point that out.
Well, so when are your next workshops?
Well, I'm going
up?
To start them again in going home next week. I think mid-June for mid-June. A few weeks. Mid-June and again in the autumn. The summer ones are sort of nice. And I have discovered, I don't know what I was expecting, because I was sort of almost apprehensive. I thought, oh my God, it's people's second language. there is such a thing as Maltese English, and I have to respect it. A little bit, but I have discovered, I mean, talent. I just came, just I thought, how is that just wandering into a workshop? I was really, why? I don't know why, but you think, oh, small island and, you know. But I think I discovered as much here as I did, you know, the ratio, teaching at City University. So
that's fantastic. So there is hope for our local literary scene yet.
I think there's, you know,
masses
of hope.
Well, that's absolutely great news. I've been talking to Marcel Darji-Smith, who's a former editor of Cosmopolitan and a creative nonfiction teacher, amongst other things, broadcast journalist and journalist to boot. Thank you for listening. The show will be repeated tomorrow at 1:30.